Boaz says to Ruth. Inclusion, provision, protection given from the Lord and Master to someone who is far off and has now been brought near by her faith. Today, my niece had open heart surgery in Houston. Her name is Katarina, but my brother and his wife and their kids call her Katie Joy. And so we call her Katie Joy as well. Y'all have not, I don't believe, had the pleasure of meeting Katie Joy, but she is very small. She's very tiny. She doesn't look like anyone in this room. She's very dark skinned. She's from Bulgaria, and she is as sweet as ice cream. She's really awesome. You know what? She doesn't have the same blood that runs through my veins or through my brother's veins or his wife's veins. She does not have the same DNA sequences as we do. But I tell you, when she was adopted into our family, she has all of the rights and the privileges that every single person of our family has. She was far away. She was destitute. She was living in an orphanage. She had no idea. She still has no idea who her parents are. But now she knows exactly who her parents are. She knows exactly who her mommy and who her daddy are. And she has been brought close, and she has been brought into my brother's household and therefore into my household as well. It's a beautiful story about Katie Joy, but the truth is that that's also true of every single person who has been brought into the household of faith, into God's household. None of us have the blood of God running through our veins. We don't have the blood of Jesus running through our veins. We have the blood of earthly parents running through our veins. But when you are bought into the household of faith, when you are bought into God's household, you have all of the rights, responsibilities, and privileges of being a child of God. And I want you to understand this overarching truth from this text. Please understand this. All who are brought near to the household of faith are protected and provided for by God. All who are brought near to the household of faith are protected and provided for by God. You remember that Naomi had went with her husband Elimelech and their two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. They went from Bethlehem, the house of bread in the land of Judea, in the promised land of God, because there was no satisfaction there in the land. God had sent a blight, a plague, a famine on the land, and they were without. So they went to a pagan nation. They went to a nation named Moab, where the pagans lived, those who did not worship Jehovah. They didn't worship Yahweh. And they went there because they heard that they could find some bread. They could find some way to live and sustain their family. So Elimelech packed up his family. They went. When they went there, they picked up two young women who married their children. One of those women was named Orpah. She was a Moabite, and her sister-in-law was Ruth. Both of them Moabites. They came from a pagan nation, did not love God when they came. Well, after a time, Elimelech, the father of the family, Mahlon and Chilion, all of the males of the family died. And Ruth and Naomi and Orpah were stranded. Naomi said, "You know what? I'm going to go back home because I've heard that the Lord has visited his people there in Israel. So I'm going to go back home. And you two daughters-in-law, I'm going to release you from your commitment. You have no more commitment to me whatsoever. Your husbands are dead. I'm old. I'm not going to bear any more children to give you husbands. You are released from me." And one of those women took her up on the offer. Orpah remained. She went back to Moab, but Ruth was inseparable from her mother-in-law. Ruth demonstrated the kind of love that God demonstrates to us. Ruth demonstrated chesed, steadfast love. She was not going to leave her mother-in-law. She had made a commitment. She had made an oath. She had not only fled her homeland, she had also left the pagan deities, the idols of her homeland. She may have been a Moabitess by birth, but she was of the house of faith by her own faith in the Lord Yahweh. She said, "Where you go, I will go, and your God will be my God." And so they go to Bethlehem. They arrive in Bethlehem. Naomi is covered in shame because she went away to a distant land and nothing but calamity has come upon her. And she looks at these women who are ridiculing her as she comes into town and she says, "It is the Lord's doing. El Shaddai, the Lord Almighty, has done this to me, and I am at peace. Though I have been brought low, though my life has been made bitter, I am at peace because it has been God's doing." And she comes back to her hometown after a decade of being gone, and she is destitute, and she is being accompanied by a woman who, in their estimation, was accursed, a Moabitess. And throughout the book of Ruth, when you read about Ruth, she's referred to as the Moabite woman, the Moabitess, the woman from Moab. People won't let her get away from where she came from. And you may feel that way about yourself. When people look at you, they may not let you let go of what you came from. But God's estimation of you may be very different than other people's estimation of you. God knows who you truly are. God knows if you're faithful to him or not. And God looked with great favor upon Ruth because she was a woman of faith. She was a woman who lived righteously. No matter what anybody in the world thought of her, she was of the household of faith. Now it says in chapter 2, we'll see the providence of God leading Naomi and Ruth out of poverty and into riches, into great glory. Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man or a mighty man of wealth of the clan of Elimelech. So he's of the same family as Naomi's husband, her deceased husband, whose name was Boaz. This is the first mention that we have here of this man, Boaz. His name means quickness. It speaks of strength and might, and this man proved to be nothing less than that. Now it says, and Ruth the Moabite, you see it? It can't help but mention this woman by where she came from. Well, you remember what you did. You remember where you came from. You can't be of the household of faith. You can't be God's. You're a Moabite. You have a cursed past and a cursed family. Not so in God's estimation. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor." And she, Naomi, said to her, "Go, my daughter." You know, with Ruth coming back into Bethlehem, her husband, her brother-in-law, and her father-in-law have all died. She is a widow. She is poor. Her mother-in-law is poor. They have nothing to their name but the clothes on their back, and I'm sure those are ragged and torn from their journey. You might think of Ruth, if we were to think of her in our day, you might think that Ruth would be one of those who would sign up for a handout. You might think Ruth would be ready just to cash it in and just get pity from people. I'm just going to go sit at the gate of the city and I'm going to beg alms because, oh, woe is me. All these men in my life have died. What am I supposed to do but beg? Ruth was not a complainer. You see what she did here? Right after she comes into Bethlehem, you know what she does? She goes to work. She goes to work. You know what the truth is here? You ought not beg for that which you can earn. You ought not beg for that which you can earn. God gave you hands. He gave you feet. He gave you a strong back. And God intends every able-bodied person to work for their bread. And you ought not be sticking to the government dole if you are able to work for it. You ought not beg for that which you are able to earn. Ruth was an industrious woman. She was a woman who knew how to work. She wasn't looking at herself in the mirror with some sort of pity party. She was going to get out of bed and she was going to go and work. There's much to be said about the opposite of Ruth in the book of Proverbs. It says this about the sluggard, the lazy person. It says in Proverbs chapter 26, verse 13 through 15, the sluggard says, he's going to come up with every excuse in the book. The sluggard says, there's a lion in the road. There is a lion in the streets. Oh, I can't get out of my house. I can't go do anything. Calamity might befall me. Looking for every excuse possible to get out of work. I hope you don't know anybody like that. We ought not make excuses to get out of work. We ought not be afraid to sweat a little and to put in a little bit of work to get the things that we need. Oh, the slugger also, it says, as a door turns on its hinges, so does a sluggard on his bed. The only work that a lazy person does is shift himself on his pillow to find the next coolest spot. Don't work yourself into a dither there, lazy man. Don't worry about getting off the couch. Hey, can somebody get me the remote, please? Not so with Ruth. She's not like this. Well, the sluggard, he buries his hand in the dish. It wears him out to bring it back to his mouth. And he can't even do that simple exercise. He's going to go hungry because he doesn't want to work just a little bit. So far from the truth is Ruth. Ruth is an industrious woman. It says in Proverbs 6, 9 through 10, how long will you lie there, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber and want like an armed man. There are some people in this world who are poor and impoverished at no fault to their own. And then there are poor people in this world who are poor and who are hungry and who are without because they won't get up and work for it. They won't put in a little sweat equity to get what they need. They're okay with a government that's just going to hand them things and keep them up in their laziness. You know what the Bible commands us to be is industrious people. We ought to work for the things that we need. We ought to become competent for the things that we need. We ought to earn those things, and we ought not beg for that which we could earn. You know, Ruth, it comes to no surprise to me that towards the end of this book that Boaz sees Ruth and she is the apple of his eye. It is not surprising to me at all because when Boaz looked at Ruth, you know who he saw? He saw that very woman that's described in Proverbs 31. You know, Proverbs 31, of everything that it says about an excellent wife, about a wonderful woman, one of the foremost things that it talks about is a woman who will get her hands dirty and work. She'll be industrious. It says this, Proverbs 31, 15, she rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household, portions for her maidens. No wonder Boaz was attracted to this woman. He looks at her and she is an excellent woman. She will definitely make an excellent wife. Now, I'll do this to commend all of our young people to go in a certain direction, young men and young ladies just as well. You may be tempted as a young man, as all young men are, to go after a woman because of things that you can observe with your eyes, because of her looks, because of her outer beauty. What Ruth exudes here is an inner beauty. She exudes an energetic soul, an industrious soul, a person who loves the Lord. She's willing to leave home and country and family behind in order to do the righteous thing. She's going to make an excellent wife. Young men, you don't need to be tricked by your eyes. Because whether we'd like to tell you or not, looks fade. Young ladies, you ought not pay so much attention to your outer appearance as you do your soul. I heard somebody once say this, a beautiful face can't hide an ugly soul. And it really can't. Eventually, when push comes to shove, that ugly soul will come out, and it won't matter how beautiful you look on the outside. You are going to have an ugly disposition, an ugly spirit about you, and that is the most unattractive thing that could possibly be true about a woman. Oh, be like Ruth. Look at Ruth. She's not moping here around. She's not in some sort of pity party. She's going to get up and she's going to go and do the right thing as she has done from chapter 1, verse 1. She's faithful to her family and she is faithful now to Yahweh, to Jehovah, to the Lord. So she says, I'm going to go out into the field and I'm going to glean. What does it say? Glean among the ears of grain. Now, when you read the Old Testament, Deuteronomy 24 and Leviticus just as well, you read that there was a provision that was made for the sojourner, for the traveler with no home, and also for the fatherless and the widow. And this is the provision from God, commanded by God, that those who would reap of their fields, they were to not go back and pick up a second helping. Whatever they got on the first run through of that field, that's what they take home. Anything that dropped to the ground, it is left there for the fatherless, the sojourner, and the widow. They're also not to reap the edges of the field or the corners either. Those who are poor amongst them ought to be able to come into the field freely and get the things that they need to eat. This is God's gracious provision for those who have nothing. Nobody can take care of the poor like God can. And so Ruth, knowing this command, no doubt by Naomi, she's teaching her the commands of the Lord, says, you know what? I'm going to go out just like all the other poor people. I'm going to go out into the field and I'm going to pick up what's left over. So she heads out. And she says, notice her faith even here in verse 2. She says, let me go out into the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor. I'm going to go and I'm going to wait. I'm going to walk through the fields and wait until the Lord opens a door for me. Wait until God puts favor in some person's eyes in order for them to let me harvest in their field. We would do well to follow Ruth's example here, that we would hurriedly walk through the doors that God opens and walk past the doors that God closes. A lot of times we run out of energy and get frustrated because we sit there and we pull on doors that God has already closed. Where if we would just recognize that, walk past it, and go to the doors that God opened, things would go a whole lot more easy for us. And so Ruth here depends on the providence and the sovereignty of God. Naomi says, go, my daughter. Look at verse 3. So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. Notice her position. She is after the reapers, picking up the leftovers. And she happened to come, not by accident, this is the providence of God. It befell her to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. What are the chances? This is not a coincidence. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem, the house of bread, and he said to the reapers, the Lord be with you. You know, this chapter is not about work ethic, and it's not about managing people, but there's a lot of things to be learned about work ethic and managing people from this. Look at Boaz just as a boss. You want to be a good boss? You want to be a successful person in this life? Look at Boaz's example. As soon as he walks into the field, what does he do? The Lord, that's the Lord's covenant name, Yahweh, Jehovah. The Lord be with you. Boaz is a godly man, and he conducts his business in a godly way. When he shows up on the scene, he invokes the name of the Lord. We ought not be afraid to invoke the name of the Lord when we go into business. He says, the Lord be with you. And they answered, the Lord bless you. What kind of people does Boaz hire? Boaz hires people who love the Lord. You will not find a more industrious, productive, efficient worker than someone who truly loves Jesus. Because they will do their work not just to please you, they will do their work to please God. The most industrious people in the workforce ought to be the people in this room. Not because we don't serve our earthly masters, we serve our heavenly master. And we go above and beyond earthly expectations because we're seeking to please God. The Lord be with you. And they answered, the Lord bless you. Then Boaz said to his young man who was in charge of the reapers, whose young woman is this? And he gives a good report. And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, she is the young Moabite woman. There it is again. She can't get away from her past or lineage. She is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. That's a bit redundant, don't you think, in your report? She's a Moabite woman who came from Moab. We got the point. She's a foreigner. She's a Gentile. That's exactly what this man is doing, though. And she's an outsider, Boaz. She comes from far off. She's not one of the people of God. She's from the country of Moab. Look at verse 7. She said, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reaper. She's not asking for any more than the law of God provisions for her. So she came, and she has, look at her example, continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest. Ruth made the most of the day. Ruth made the most of her time awake. She worked from sun up, and you'll see she works until sundown. And in fact, she works from the beginning of the harvest to the end of the harvest. She works her heart out, and all she takes is a short rest. She's going to go to the water cooler and get a drink, and she's going to be back at it. She's not going to expect anybody to take it easy on her because she is a woman or a widow. No. She's going to go and work. She's not going to beg for that which she could earn. Verse 8 says, then Boaz said to Ruth, now listen, my daughter, do not glean in another field or leave this one. You hear his grace? But keep close to my young women. You are included. That's strange, isn't it? His servants keep reminding him, she's a Moabite. She's from Moab. And yet Boaz looks at her and says, you walk with my young women. You're one of them. You are included. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping and go after them. I'm going to provide for you. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? I'm going to protect you. You are not without protection when you are in my field, Boaz says to Ruth. Inclusion, provision, protection given from the Lord and Master to someone who is far off and has now been brought near by her faith. And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn. They will serve you. You don't go get your own water. You get what they've got. You are included. You are near. You are now as one of my servants. Look at verse 10. You know, many people, when they get a handout, from the government dole, or some people who, they'll even come to a church and they'll look for a handout. Help me with my water bill. Help me with my light bill. There's some people who truly need that help. There are other people that go from church to church to church and pray on charity. And they pray on hospitality. And they have a mindset of entitlement. Oh, the government owes me this, or the church owes me this. If those people were Ruth and they were in the field, what do you think their response would have been to Boaz? Boaz, you should have given me these things. You should have protected me. I am entitled to that. You should have provided for me. You should have included me. That's not Naomi's response at all. Naomi is not entitled. She is humbled. She's grateful. She's glad. She's thankful. Look at verse 10. Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me, since I'm a foreigner? I know I came from far off. I know I'm not included in the people of Israel. And now you're showing me kindness? You hear the humility in her? You hear how in her heart she is already brought low. One's pride will bring him low, but he who is lowly in spirit will obtain honor. Proverbs 29:23. Look at verse 11. But Boaz, you humbled yourself, Ruth, but Boaz answered her, all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. He says, I know the things that you've done. I've known the righteous deeds that you have enacted, that you have not been rewarded for these things. And just as the Lord rewards good deeds, so also Boaz is going to reward the deeds of Ruth. You see, we as Baptists, we rightfully proclaim that salvation is a gift of God. It's not according to our works, lest any man should boast. But you know what? We ought not throw the baby out with the bathwater. God does reward good works. God honors those who honor him. You want to be blessed by God? You won't be blessed by God by being a sluggard. You will never be blessed by God by being lazy. You will never be blessed by God by doing the wrong thing. You want to put yourself in the prime opportunity to be blessed? Walk in righteousness. Walk in holiness. And walk actively as you pursue the will of God. Look at verse 12, so that we don't think that it's Boaz who is puffed up in arrogance because he's a mighty man of wealth, a powerful businessman. Look at verse 12. The Lord, there it is, the covenant name of God again. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. You see, Boaz, powerful, mighty, wealthy man, he won't even take credit for the ability to bless Ruth. He says, it's not me. I'm just a mere instrument to bless you. When we have the opportunity to bless people, we ought not lord it over them. We ought to say, no, it's not me blessing you. God has given me provision in order to bless you. It's the Lord taking care of you. Boaz is careful to give credit to the Lord. And notice what he says here. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. You see, he recognizes that she and Naomi have not come to Bethlehem just because there's prosperity there. They have come there because the Lord is there. They have come there because the Lord's blessing is there. They have fled to the refuge of God. Boaz recognizes this. You've come here because you heard. Remember in chapter 1? You've heard that the Lord has visited his people. And you have come to rest under his wings, to be provided by his hand. And those who come to the Lord for rest and for provision will find it. Every time. Look at verse 13. Then she said, humbly again, I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants. You've included me as one of your slaves. You've treated me just as well as you treat all of your other employees, but I'm not even one of your employees. But you treat me just like one of them. And you know what? Just when you think that Boaz's grace and kindness and love towards Ruth couldn't get any better, it does just that. Look here at verse 14. And at mealtime, Boaz said to her, come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine. Notice this. She sat beside the reapers. You see, she's not having to reach down in her knapsack there and grab some of the heads of grain and rub them together and eat them as a meager portion. No, where is she invited? You sit right next to my most honored servants at my table, dipping your bread into my cup. You talk about gracious. You talk about kind and good to her. So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed to her roasted grain, and she ate, notice this, until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. What a picture here. that those who come to the household of faith get far more than they could ever have hoped to. There are people in this world who are hungry. They're hungry to be satisfied. And so they feed themselves on all sorts of things. They try to find their satisfaction in food, in entertainment, in sex, in drugs. They want to be satisfied, and they pursue all of these things because they have appetite. And the thing that I would argue against these people is not that they just have too great an appetite and they need to suppress it. I would say that they are not hungry enough. They have not come to the point where they are desirous enough to have unending satisfaction in God. You want satisfaction, you get it at the Lord's table. It is unending. And after you're satisfied, what does it say about Ruth? She had some left over. Full to the brim and running over even in the end. There is satisfaction never ending in the Lord. And she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. When she rose to glean, look at this. Boaz instructed his young men. Remember where she was before. She was behind the reapers picking up the leftovers. But Boaz instructed his young men, verse 15, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves. You see how he's changed her position here? Now she's not following behind the threshers, not following behind the reapers. Now she's walking in front of them. She's walking amidst standing fields of unpicked ripe grain, able just to buy the handful, grab. You see, he's not treating her anymore as a slave, is he? You know, if a slave would have done this, you know what they'd have accused the slave of doing? He's a thief. He's robbing from my field. He doesn't have the right to walk through that middle of the field. If he's a beggar, he needs to walk on the corners. Ruth is no longer a foreigner. She's no longer a servant. Now she is an heir. She is family. She was far off, but now she's been brought near. She's walking, let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. You don't say a word to her. And also, pull out some from the bundles for her and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her. You just reach in the back of that wagon, and you take out of the fullness of what you've picked, and you throw it out in front of her so she can pick it up. You make it as easy as possible for her, because I'm going to pave her way, is what Boaz says. Look at 17. Because you know what most people would do at this point. They're walking among the grain, picking among the sheaves that have been thrown at their feet. You know what? I'm pretty full. I guess it's time just to cash it in and time to go home. I've been blessed, so you know what? Now it's time for a little bit of leisure. Look at verse 17. So she gleaned in the field until evening. Blessing is no excuse for laziness. Please understand that. Blessing is not an excuse for laziness. Just because God may have blessed you with plenty, you got plenty in the bank account, you got nice cars, you got a nice house, that does not excuse laziness. God intends his people to be industrious people. And when we have more than we need, rather than being Ruth, we ought to start to become Boaz. We ought to start to bless other people. Look at verse 17, the second half. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. That makes no sense to us. It was about an ephah. Anybody know how much an ephah is? An ephah, I don't know what that is. An ephah is just a way of measuring dry grain. I'm going to tell you something else that's not going to make sense. In an ephah, there was what was called 10 omers. See? Getting more confusing. You can divide an ephah into 10 omers, but this will make sense. One omer was enough to make enough bread for a grown man to eat for an entire day. From one day's work, Ruth goes home with enough grain to feed a grown man for a week and a half. I imagine when she went out, she was just trying to get dinner. She comes home with a week and a half worth of food. You talk about the Lord's blessing on her life. How do you think Naomi was going to react when she came home carrying that? And she took it up and went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also brought out and gave her what food she had left over. You see that at the dinner table? They just said, hey, Ruth, take whatever else is left over. We know you're full. Pack it up and put it in your lunch kit. All the food she had left over after being satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, where did you glean today and where have you worked? Blessed to be the man who took notice of you. Just when you think it couldn't have gotten any better, look. So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, the man's name with whom I work today is Boaz. You can imagine some light bells ding started going off in Naomi's head. And Naomi, verse 20, said to her daughter-in-law, may he be blessed by the Lord. You see, Boaz is not credited with his graciousness and his kindness. It's the Lord. The Lord blessed this man. May he be blessed by the Lord. Whose kindness? Whose kindness is she talking about? The Lord's kindness. And she, in fact, uses that word chesed, that word for steadfast love. The Lord just won't quit loving us. No matter how down in the ditch we get, the Lord won't let go of us. The Lord won't stop loving us. May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living, us, or the dead. The Lord still remembers the righteous deeds of Elimelech, her husband, and Mahlon and Chilion, how they tried to provide for their family. The Lord has not forgotten their deeds, and he will never forget their deeds. The Lord won't forget your deeds either. Even the things that you do that nobody knows, those spouses that take care of their dying spouse, even to their death, and nobody knows the trouble that they went through to be there every step of the way. Those children who look after their parents and nobody knows the struggles that they had to stay by their dying parents' bedside until that last day. You know who remembers? The Lord remembers. The Lord knows. The Lord knows the kindness that you showed to that stranger today when you gave him just a cold glass of water in Jesus' name. The Lord remembers all of these things. May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead. You can imagine Naomi looks at herself and says, maybe I'm even felt a little dead in my soul because all my family seems to die. One of my daughters-in-law abandons me. But no, the Lord won't abandon me ever. Naomi also said to her, the man is a close relative of ours. One of our redeemers, that word is Goel. Goel. It means kinsman redeemer. When you read in Deuteronomy chapter 25, you read of a principle, a law called levirate marriage. Levirate marriage. And it's essentially this, because the inheritance from God is an everlasting inheritance. If a man dies without an heir, his next closest kin is to take his wife and produce an heir so that that inheritance stays in that family, in that name forever. What's the problem for Ruth and Naomi? Naomi's husband died and her two sons have died. There's no one to prolong the name of Elimelech. But lo and behold, Ruth, by God's providence, by happenstance, just stumbles into Boaz's field and is shown steadfast love by a kinsman redeemer, by one who is eligible by God's law to carry on the name of Elimelech. And he is one of our redeemers. Verse 21, and Ruth the Moabite said, besides, he said to me, you shall keep close. He's included me by my young men until they have finished all my harvest. That's not just talking about the wheat harvest. That's not just talking about a single day's work. That's talking about the wheat and the barley harvest. And verse 22, Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women, lest in another field you be assaulted. You're protected. You're safe with Boaz. So she kept close to the young women of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and wheat harvests. And she lived with her mother-in-law. What a powerful example that Ruth is for us in work ethic. What a powerful example Ruth is for us in faithfulness to God, in faithfulness to do the right thing no matter what the cost. What a powerful example Boaz serves for us to bless other people who have not. And what a powerful illustration of the love of God towards sinful people like us to bring us into his household. I want to read one passage to you out of Ephesians chapter 2 because it talks about us. When we read about Ruth, the Moabite, the cursed woman, we need to understand that we are also that same type of person without Jesus. It says in Ephesians chapter 2, verse 12 through 13, "Remember that you were at that time separated from Christ, alienated from the commonwealth of Israel, and strangers to the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. But now, in Christ Jesus, you who were once far off have been brought near by the blood of Christ." You see, through Jesus, we're not foreigners to the household of God. We're not having to pay for the sins of our past when we figuratively lived in Moab. Now, because of Jesus and because of his grace and his kindness, he not only provides for us, he protects us, and we are safe under the wings in whom we have come to find refuge. All that to remind you that all who were far off and have been brought near are both protected and provided for by God. Would you pray with me?